I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. We've been away for a little break, but now we're here again and I'm delighted to be here.
It was quite a long break for us, actually.
Was it? How long was it?
It was like 6 weeks or something.
Oh, that's a long break. But mind you, we'd gone quite a long period without stopping, hadn't we?
Because we ran on when COVID hit, we ran from season to season.
Yeah.
Because we thought people could do
it. Yeah. It'd be really nice to reconnect with our listeners too. I hope you've been surviving the rigours of meltdown, lockdown, or lockdown, meltdown, or whatever it may be today.
Also, I haven't told you this, Dad, but on your birthday, which wasn't long ago, I put a picture of you on our Instagram page.
Yeah.
And wrote happy birthday. I'm just going to read out some of the comments, which I think
you'll like. Oh, crikey. Oh, dear.
Hold on, let me show you first which pic I put up. Got a lot. Put this pic up, that old classic, one of my faves.
Crikey.
Got a lot of comments. Very handsome man. Happy birthday, G-man. I miss you. Hair! Exclamation, exclamation.
Yes. Where did that go?
Happy birthday, Geoffrey. So handsome, heart eyes emoji. When I first saw this pic, I thought, oh no, I think an evil killer is hot. Until I read the blurb underneath and it was in fact your father.
Oh, Molly.
I enjoyed that very much. You said you were a handsome bloke and very fanciable. Bet you were a catch back then.
Oh, dear. Oh,
so,
oh, darling.
You've a lot of fans out there.
Yeah, well, I'm very touched. I really am. I'm deeply touched.
Yeah, it's good. I thought you'd enjoy that.
Thank you. Oh, gosh. Well, how have you been surviving lockdown this week?
Yeah, not too bad. And my work's sort of getting a bit busier, so
well,
I'm just working.
I don't know. I mean, been a funny old week. Hard. I found this week hard work, you know. Mm-hmm. Two long interviews, four different subjects. Mm. Sometimes my mind glazes over and then I've got to prepare. Mm-hmm. I found this week hard going, you know. I mean, it's wonderful to be asked to work. I mean, it's just sensational. And I certainly appreciate it. I'm very, very conscious of how difficult it is for many people out there. Mm. I'm really conscious of it. Because, I mean, I've been walking around central London. It's very quiet indeed. I mean, genuinely quiet. Mm. I stood in High Holborn yesterday morning. I came out from that interview about Rosemary West. Mm. And I stood on High Holborn. It's 11:30 in the morning. And I didn't see one piece of traffic for 2 minutes.
No traffic?
Nothing.
That's so weird because there's loads of traffic around me.
No traffic whatever.
I suppose people don't want to come central and because of congestion charge.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no business in central, is there? Whereas there's probably more business outside of
I think local, suburban shops, restaurants, pubs
exactly.
Work. But central London. I mean, Covent Garden's still a desert.
Dead.
Absolute desert. And as for the theatres, I mean, talk to any of my friends who are producers and they're all, well, they haven't got any hair left like me, but, you know, they're tearing what left out.
Yeah, don't know what will happen with that still.
I think it will come back, but it'll be a long, old, slow process. Mm. And indeed. I think people have to be reminded, and that in that respect, I agree with the Prime Minister. People need to be reminded that it's not all right to go out in huge groups in the middle of Manchester, party as though nothing had happened because it's been a hot day. That is absolute madness. Mm. And unfortunately, now we realise, because we've seen the figures, that young people can catch it just as much as older people.
Yeah, everyone can catch it.
You know. And
well, think of all of our listeners in America. They're having a
tough
time.
Oh, my heart goes out to them.
And mine.
Absolutely. Think of that. Mm. I mean,
That's a bad situation.
It is a very, very bad situation.
But we're going to try and distract you all for the next, you know, however long, for your walk, run, jog,
dog,
washing up, whatever it is that you're doing while you're listening to us.
There's that lady in Dubai who walks her dog to us.
Yeah, two dogs, actually.
She sent us
a picture of her dogs. And please do message us and tell us what you do while you listen to our
podcast. I'd be fascinated. Yeah. Absolutely fascinated.
We've got a number of Molly's... We have Instagram.
Assembled some suggestions.
I went through the Instagram suggestions. If anyone has any suggestions of things, we can't do them all in one go, but we do keep a note of every single one and who sent them.
Yes, we do.
So we'll really try and cover them off. If there's anyone you want us to cover, just let us know. You can email us at bloodtides.podcast@gmail.com, or you can find Jeffrey on his website, or you can go on Instagram and find me, bloodties_pod, or on Twitter, the same handle. So we're accessible, and we do try and reply to everyone.
We do try.
And we're very grateful.
We are enormously grateful, and we really appreciate the loyalty and friendship that you have for us. It's very touching and incredibly heartwarming.
Yeah, it is. And on that note, shall we plow on, press on?
Yes, we thought we'd return with a podcast that we were thinking of doing at the end of the last season. But because of the publicity surrounding Madeleine McCann, we substituted at the last minute. So we thought we'd do one of the most interesting and yet in many ways most horrific of the American serial killers. Now, I have been mispronouncing his name, so I must come clean immediately. His name is Ed Gein. Edward Theodore Gein, although it's spelt G-E-I-N.
We thought it was Gein.
I did.
But it's Gein.
But I went through all the videos and every single one said Gein.
So this is, we're calling this Mommy Dearest?
Mommy Dearest.
Right, well here we go with Mommy Dearest.
Edward Theodore Gein, who became known as the Butcher of Plainfield, Wisconsin, was born in August 1906. He was the younger son of George and Augusta Gein, and he held an elder brother called Henry, who was actually born in 1901. They started life in a very remote part of Wisconsin, but eventually moved to Plainfield. It's important to remember that George Gein, Ed's dad, was a drunk, a nasty drunk. And his mother, Augusta, hated him, despised him, and yet stayed with him. She was very religious. She was a Lutheran, upright, very determined. And the boys and the parents eventually moved to a 155-acre farm in Plainfield, Wisconsin. The house was quite remote, and the boys basically sustained themselves by doing odd jobs around the farm. It wasn't a rich family by any means, but it was an unhappy one. I mean, nowadays we'd call it dysfunctional, but I think in those days, we're talking about the late 30s and the early 40s, it was just unhappy. George got drunk a lot. Augusta hated him. She was fervently religious. And wanted to keep her two sons for herself. They weren't allowed friends. It's very interesting how common that is in the mothers
in the mothers of serial killers.
Yes, it's fascinating how common. For example, Rosemary West's mother, Daisy, didn't like her having friends. It happens really quite a lot. I don't know quite why. I haven't got an explanation, but it's very interesting.
Ed Kemper's mum like that.
Yeah. It's very interesting that somehow other people are dangerous and we've got to keep it all to ourselves and it's all in the family. Well, let's put it this way. She used to read to her boys from the Old Testament every afternoon. And among the many moral lessons she taught them was that all women were promiscuous and students of the devil.
Why would she say that?
Well, I think it speaks a great deal to her relationship with George, don't you?
Yeah, but it doesn't do a huge amount for her relationship with herself.
No, it certainly doesn't. But as will become clearer...
I wonder what she would have done if she'd had daughters.
I do too. I mean, very, very interesting, wouldn't it? Ed, the younger son, was shy, but given to... And I've always found this is the most remarkable thing about him. He was given to sudden, random bursts of laughter. And other, you know, he'd be at school and suddenly, for no reason, he'd burst out laughing. He was it's a strange quality. But his mother punished him ruthlessly if he ever tried to make friends with anybody at school. You're mine and I'm keeping you. He wasn't stupid. He actually quite bright, could certainly learn to read and write, perfectly capable of holding down odd jobs here and there. You know, he was no fool. On the contrary, if anything, he was really quite sly. But probably the most important thing that was to happen to the family was that on the 1st of August 1940, when Ed was 34... and his brother Henry was 39, was that their father George died of heart failure, brought on, of course, by alcohol. He was 66. Now, here comes the distinction between the two brothers. Ed remains incredibly close to his mum, Augusta. Henry is in a relationship and doesn't care for his mother at all.
Well, that's because she told him never to have a relationship, I'd imagine.
Yes. All women are students of the devil. So, as you can imagine, there's a tension in the Geen household. George is dead. Augusta has got clutching Ed close to her chest, so to speak, metaphorically. And Henry's intent on his own relationship. And now comes one of the most extraordinary elements of this quite extraordinary story. On May the 16th, 1944, the brothers start a fire on a sort of vegetation patch, which is part of the farm, part of the 155 acres. When eventually the fire department, the fire brigade, come and put out the fire... they discover Henry's dead body in the remains of the fire. At that point, everybody thinks, oh, he's just died of smoke inhalation. There's no autopsy. There's no investigation. It's just, oh, a terrible accident. It wasn't a terrible accident at all. He was Ed Geen's first victim.
Oh.
We are talking about Cain and Abel, except the other way around. Remember, Cain and Abel, it was the elder brother who killed the younger. This is the younger brother.
Killing the older brother.
Killing the older one. And all because of Mum.
Because he didn't like Mum.
He couldn't like Mum.
Mom.
It was extraordinary. Ed was taking his revenge for his elder brother's dislike of Augusta. And yet, and it's the most poignant element of this story, now Ed and his mother are alone together, but all of a sudden, shortly after Henry's body is discovered, Augusta has a paralysing stroke. And now Ed is her only carer. it's impossible to exaggerate the closeness of the bond between Ed and his mother.
Mm.
And at one point, not long after this, in 1946, the two of them visit another neighbour, Ed and Augusta. And it's a discussion about the farms. And all of a sudden, this chap called Smith is talking to Augusta and Ed. They're in the truck. And a woman comes out of the house. Now, Augusta throws an absolute fit. Why is he living? Is he living with this woman? I mean, they're not married. You can almost imagine it, can't you?
Mm.
The extraordinary nature of that. That woman's a, you know, promiscuous witch. She dies almost immediately afterwards, having had another heart attack.
Gosh. She got so het up about it.
She got, well, not just a bit. But now, as it was, I think it's one of the most extraordinary things. Ed had lost his only friend and his one true love, and he was absolutely alone in the world. It's haunting.
Yeah, and he's quite old by this point, in his late 30s.
Absolutely, yes. Well, he was born in 1906. By now, he's 40, or almost. Augusta died at 67. Geen is absolutely poleaxed by her death. But he decides to keep the farm and to live in the house that they've all lived in. Except now he shuts all the rooms, boards up all the rooms except one, which is right beside the kitchen, which he keeps for himself. It's like he's stored it all in aspic. The whole house is just a kind of mausoleum. He does, sustains himself by doing odd jobs. And guess what? He sells off a few acres that Henry had owned. He was still intent on taking his revenge on. And I'm not meant to, I'm not laughing. It's horrid. But and then in 1951, he gets a government grant. So, you know, he can sustain himself. But what the world doesn't know about Ed Geen is that he has a hobby. Grave robbing.
Oh.
He's a grave robber. He goes round.
I wonder how one gets into that. Perhaps there are groups you can join.
I don't think there are any groups you can join.
I'm joking.
He particularly likes the graves of recently deceased middle-aged women.
Like his mum?
Mm-hmm. Well, his mum was a bit older than that, actually.
Younger than his mum.
A bit younger. Because he has a particular passion for their skin and bones.
Ugh.
You will remember that this is a man who helped to inspire Buffalo Bill in The Silence of the Lambs, one of our earlier podcasts.
I had briefly forgotten that. I knew he did something. I thought he maybe kept his mum in the house when she was dead. But
well, we'll get to that.
Oh, good.
We'll get to that. Overall, he steals from 9 graves in the local area and is especially keen on recently deceased middle-aged women. And he takes the bodies, and he doesn't just take the bodies. He takes them home and proceeds to make things out of them. He makes a lampshade. Yeah, he makes human face masks. He makes a belt of nipples. He collects 4 noses. This is all in the house, all in his house, in his room.
In that one room.
In that one room. He's got skulls
That's
on
so
the
disgusting.
End of all of his bedposts. Of course, nobody visits him. So who's to see? These are just his trophies, his memorabilia, his paraphernalia.
Ugh.
Yes, it's extremely creepy. Deeply creepy. In 1954, after he'd got the government grant and sold that some of his brother's land, he kills, although we don't know this at that point, a tavern owner called Mary Hogan, who lived and worked in Plainsfield, Wisconsin. But all we know is that, all anybody knows is she disappeared. No sign of her. Actually, her head is later discovered in Ed Gein's house. One of his many trophies. He was extraordinarily precise in everything he did. I mean, he was literally trying to create what he later described as a mummy skin so that he could become his mother.
What, for him to put on?
Yes, he wanted to crawl inside this female skin which he'd constructed from robbing graves so that he could experience what it was like to be his mother. That's why I called this Mommy Dearest.
That's a psychotic break.
Absolutely. There's no question. And what's astonishing, unlike, say, any of the great BTK or Gacy or Bundy, or there aren't a myriad of victims all over the place, because part of the time Gein is actually working with the dead.
Yeah.
And he's not...
See why he would inspire fictional...
Oh, yes. You would.
That's really creepy. That's way creepier than a lot of the other stuff.
I think this is the creepiest of all. But finally, on the morning of November the 16th, 1957, Ed Gein is now 50. 51. A hardware store owner in Plainsfield called Betty Warden. It's lovely. If you look at the pictures, it's fascinating. It says Warden's Hardware Store above the door. Big letters.
Mm-hmm.
Wooden store. We're talking about small town Wisconsin. Anyway, she doesn't open the store that particular morning. And no one can quite understand why. Anyway, it so turns out that her son is a deputy sheriff in the local county sheriff's office. And at 5 o'clock, he goes and opens the store to discover blood stains and an open cash register. Now, the last person to visit Betty Warden's hardware store the night before, on the 15th of November, was none other than Ed Gein, and who told a lot of people in the town that he was coming back the following morning for a gallon of antifreeze. We're talking about November, it's Wisconsin, it's quite cold, a bit of snow on the ground here and there. Well, John Warden, Betty's son, puts two and two together fairly quickly and arrests Gein at the local grocery store because he's come into town again. Well, Gein is, same as he always was, a bit unkempt, a bit unshaven, a bit grumpy, keeps himself to himself. Yeah, people see him around, but, it's only Ed, But then, of course, the sheriff and Betty's son, John, search Ed's house.
Not good.
Well, the first thing they discover is Betty Warden's decapitated body hanging upside down as if it were a deer in an outhouse. Blood on the ground and the head in another place. And then it's like a treasure trove. They go inside.
Or House of Horrors.
Yeah, or a House of Horrors. They go inside and they find chair coverings, the seat of a chair made from human skin. They find face masks. They find skulls. They find, as I say, a lampshade made of...
Can you imagine?
Well, it is genuinely horrific. I mean, and he's been living in the midst of all this paraphernalia for years. He's been collecting it and making things up. Can you imagine? Extraordinary behaviour. And, well, he finally admits that he's been grave robbing. You know, he admits killing Mary Hogan, the missing tavern owner from 1954. And he can't really deny killing Betty Warden because, after all, her body's hanging up in his outhouse. So it's not really a question of investigation when it comes to Ed Gein. It's more a question of this man is probably a lunatic.
I think he's very, very troubled, was very, very troubled.
Yes.
Pretty extraordinary to do that kind of thing. It almost doesn't seem real, like, you know, when we discuss the line between fact and fiction. My friend Taves always says, if the human mind can think it up, it's probably been done already.
Oh, I'm thinking your friend Taves is absolutely right.
But it's so interesting because those are the sorts of things where you're like, no one would actually do that. You know, you think, oh, someone's created a monster in the, you know, a serial killer in their head, or Buffalo Bill who's making, you know, a suit of human skin. But, oh, no, it was inspired by true
Ed Gein. Originally, in 1957, when after, you know, he's been arrested, he's arraigned, of course, only for the Warden murder, because they can't be absolutely sure how Mary Hogan died, although he admits that he shot her with a rifle. He also, incidentally, admits shooting Betty Warden with a rifle, .22. So it's not one of those serial killers, slasher attacks.
It's not, the killing part isn't the pleasurable part for him either.
No.
Yeah.
It's mummy.
Yeah.
It's mommy dearest, really.
Yeah.
And so he's originally found mentally incompetent to stand trial due to some kind of paranoid schizophrenia. He goes to a mental facility. And 11 years later, in 1968, he's found to be mentally able to collaborate with his defence in a trial, a proper trial, except not with a jury, simply with a judge. The judge hears the evidence. There isn't really any feasible defence. And the judge finds Ed Gein guilty, but then not guilty by reason of insanity. He was sent to another mental facility, and eventually, in July 1984, at the age of 77, Ed Gein died. History doesn't relate, I would have loved to have known, what he was like in the mental facility. Perhaps he was very good at woodwork or embroidery.
Sewing,
or,
yeah.
Mm.
Upholstery.
Was it? Yes, upholstery. Mm. It is chilling. But of course, as you quite rightly reminded me, Ed Gein inspired a good deal of fiction. The most famous bit was a novel in 1959, 2 years after he'd finally been discovered, by Robert Blocher. It was called Psycho and was then made into a film by Alfred Hitchcock, starring Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates, who keeps his mummified mother in that house that everyone can remember, which is immortalised on the lot in Universal, if you do the Universal
subsequently
tour.
Subsequently made into a TV series called Bates Motel.
Yep. He also inspired, Gein also inspired, Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And of course,
making a spin-off of that too.
And of course, Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. Gein is, I think, an extraordinary case.
Mm.
But not really, doesn't fit the stereotype of, as I say, the kind of conventional American serial killer. Because he wasn't touring the state looking for victims. He was all of them much, much closer to home. 9 local cemeteries.
Mm.
And he only really had two victims that we're certain of. But there's something about that level of madness that is unforgettable. A man who literally took pleasure in creating masks for himself to wear.
I mean, he was just really messed up by his mum. So
that silence you hear, my friends, is me nodding my head.
That's
It's unbelievable.
I was going to quote Larkin.
Well, I mean, he wasn't the only inspiration for Buffalo Bill. I mean, just I ought to remind you, there were a series. There are about six.
Yeah, we'd covered them all in our special.
He was by far the most significant.
The Real Silence of the Lambs, yeah. Double Bill.
Yeah.
Do go back and have a listen if you haven't listened to it already.
I mean, the other inspirations were Jerry Brudos and Charles Heidnick and Kemper to some extent, because he killed his grandparents at first to see what it felt like.
Yeah, Kemper didn't treat his mum super well.
No.
But let's not forget.
If you take my point, that I think there's something about Gene which is haunting. He creeps into your mind. If you look at a picture of him, if you type in, he looks incredibly ordinary.
Hold on.
He's not huge like Kemper.
Ed.
E-I-N.
I mean, he looks like the sort of person who potentially could be doing that in this picture. He looks kind of
That's the sort of unshaven picture. Yeah, but if you look at the other, there are quite a lot of other ones. That's a sort of self-fulfilling picture.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, when he's he's not kind of he's sort of handsome American-y looking.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, you know, small town America.
Wow, there are some quite brutal pictures of his victims and the masks and other things he made. He made cutlery with bones.
Yes. Also, he cut off the tops of skulls to use them as soup bowls.
Yes, I see that here. Oh, wow, the chair of skin.
Mm.
And it's got the faces on it.
Yes. Molly's face is a picture.
That is really weird. I'm not going to put that on Instagram, but feel free to look up your own. I'm not looking at that anymore.
Feel free to enjoy it yourself.
Feel free to do that in your own
time. But anyway, darling, that is Ed Gein, and we ought to talk about something cheerful.
Well, thanks, Dad. Yeah, that's Ed Gein, Mommy Dearest.
Mommy Dearest.
That was fascinating. Thank you.
It's a great story.
Yeah, that is a good one. Very good, very good. We should talk about something cheery.
What about Betsy? How's Betsy?
Betsy. She's good. She's on good form, I think.
Good.
She's coming over to say hello.
Oh, good old Betsy.
There she is. Yeah, she's on good form. We had a decent walk. We walked to Angel before we got on the bus, so we...
Lovely.
Oh, yeah, Jeffrey and I are recording this together.
This is the first time.
Mano a mano.
Since March the 14th.
Yeah.
And here we are. In August. Yep.
Oh, what? 1st of August.
1st of August.
Back together.
It goes out on the 3rd, doesn't it? Monday.
Yes, this is going out on Monday.
It is quite remarkable to be back together because I kind of got used to having to do it remotely.
Jeffrey's no longer on tech, for which he's probably extremely grateful.
Well,
although you did set up a lot of it on your own before I'd even arrived.
Yes, I've got to learn something.
You did a very good job handling it all separated.
It's another challenge. And I've been doing yet more murder, yet more death.
Okay, we're talking about something cheery though, don't
we? Yeah, the trouble is, it's not been a very cheery week. I was saying to Mo on the phone, I've been enjoying a series on Amazon Prime. Mo very kindly got me a Fire Stick, and I'm enjoying a series on Amazon Prime called Goliath, which stars one of my favourite actors, Billy Bob Thornton. Absolutely gripping. He's a kind of lawyer who's gone slightly dotty and then begins to rehabilitate himself. It's a series of three. Three series.
How far have you?
I'm in series three now. Three. I've done one and two. I think one is, which also stars William Hurt, incidentally, as his former partner in this big law firm. And very, very good indeed. Quite spectacularly good. And Thornton, as ever, is wonderful. And Hurt plays a villain brilliantly.
Have you ever watched Suits, the Meghan Markle show?
No.
Oh. I really like the first season of Suits. Not Meghan Markle, sort of, just a vibe, but it's set in a law firm. It's quite cool.
Oh, I'll have a look. Yeah. I will.
And also, I'm going to show you a better way to find TV shows. I've worked out on our thing now.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Dad.
Pleasure. Now, have you watched anything good?
I have a penchant for emotionally driven reality TV, and they've currently just put two seasons of 24 Hours and A&E on Netflix. I've watched pretty much every episode of 24 Hours and A&E, but I'm rewatching the ones that are now on Netflix.
Crikey.
They did a new hospital show on Netflix called Lenox Hill, which I watched about within a day, which is the hospital in New York.
I know we're
very much looking forward to the second series of that already. No, I sometimes find it hard to watch dramas and stuff. I mean, I watched I May Destroy You because, you know, and I really enjoyed Mrs. America, which I told you I watched.
Yes, I haven't got around to that yet. I will.
But yeah, currently I'm working a lot, so in the evenings I just watch an episode.
Sorry.
Of 24 Hours and A&E.
Well, I
go to bed very early as well. I don't finish work till 6 and then I go to bed at 9. So
yeah. So you haven't got a lot of time.
Not a lot of time, what with eating.
I find the drama breaks me out of the reality.
Yeah, yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's kind of the other way around.
For me, it's the opposite.
I totally understand that. Mm. But I find the drama takes me away from what I'm doing during the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, you know, if I, for example, researching cases like this and all of the, for other things, and the drama somehow just,
it transports you out.
I'm out of it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've gone somewhere else.
I always miss, when I get really into a series, I miss everyone so much when it finishes. Okay.
Thanks, darling.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you to all the people who help us. Thank you to Poppy Damon, our producer, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who did our caricature, to Jeffrey for all of his hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you all so much for listening. And as I always say, bad things happen to good people, so do be careful out there.